Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Arsenal have surrendered possession too easily. Giroud, Hazard. Well, that is sublime. Arsenal creating their own problems. It's going to be Hazard's night, and it's going to be Chelsea's night.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan, Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
You could have stopped that intro at Arsenal have surrendered.
Oh, they go down in defeat 4-1. Chelsea hoist the Europa League trophy. We will talk all about that. That is why we're here, of course, to recap that game, talk about Eden Hazard and some of the comments that he made after the game, talk about Maurizio Sarri, the scenes from before the game yesterday, and what his future may be. He's a thrill a minute. So it should be fun. We also have red card man of the match. I feel really good about my red card and man of the match. Sometimes I don't. This is not one of those times.
I've got some topical issues that I want to talk to everybody about.
This is like an episode of The Daily.
Almost.
We also want to tell you, before we get into the Europa League stuff, like we mentioned on yesterday's podcast, we're going to be out watching the Champions League final.
Together.
This weekend. We did make the decision, after a lot of deliberating, as to whether or not that would be a wise thing for our friendship.
But it's so unique. It's probably not going to happen again for a long time.
Probably, let's be honest.
It's very unlikely.
Yeah.
And we're going to watch it together at the Hairy Lemon, 28 Avenue B in Manhattan. And we'd like you to join us. It's an open invitation. We're not giving you anything. Bring beer money. Bring beer money, right? And let us know if you're coming. Because, well, I won't say it doesn't matter. We want you to be there, but if you're not there, we'll still be there, is the point. So we are there. Drop in. Have a beer. Enjoy, let's be honest, the greatest day in the sporting calendar. I read an article today which said how it's just the biggest sporting event of the year. And it really is. In the last few years, it's become this monster.
Well, the best thing that they've ever done was, I mean, remember when this game was played on like a Wednesday?
What do you mean, remember?
Up until a few years ago.
My youth. I used to finish school on a Wednesday night.
But like, don't you think, like, the fact that they were sitting around in a room and probably thinking of ways to improve this, and like, the guy who said that idea, he was probably given a huge raise. Yeah, it's like the most obvious decision ever made in history. Like, didn't any of these people ever watch a Super Bowl or like?
I imagine all these UEFA crusties in like their 70s sat around a table.
Wednesday.
One of them goes, "Well, we simply can't move it from Wednesday." And then in the corner, "I have an idea." Oh, the representative from Cincinnati, and a guy with a hot, you know, a really tall hat and a monocle, like a real kind of Mr. Monopoly guy.
Yeah.
And he goes, "What about the American audience? Ah, cha cha cha. Let's give them something to watch and let's make some money."
UEFA has a rep from Cincinnati, huh?
Yep. Who came in on a steam barge.
Yeah, like one of those, like, riverboat.
Yeah, and he's extremely rich.
Ferrying down the Mississippi straight into The Hague.
Made his money in molasses.
So it'll be really fun, honestly. The Hairy Lemon on Avenue B between 2nd and 3rd Streets in Manhattan.
It may not be fun. It may be me and you sat there.
That's right. So we need people there as like a buffer.
Intention. Well, yeah, people there to separate us.
I will say this seriously. Like, Liverpool fans, by all means, come on down. But speaking to my Spurs brethren, because I know you guys listen, because I see all your tweets, and I love all of you. If you are in New York and you can make it, please do. Like, I need Tottenham fans to hug, to be nervous with, because I know how this goes, and I know the power of Liverpool in this city, and
it's
I know that there will probably be a sizable Liverpool contingent there, with you leading the charge. I can already see you screaming the lyrics to "You'll Never Walk Alone."
No.
So I need.
He's a center half. He's a number four.
Watching defend. Need help. I need all of you. I'm mobilizing the Tottenham army here, and I need all of your help. So that it should be great. Hairy Lemon, Avenue B.
Let us know.
2nd and 3rd Street.
Let us know if you're going. Twitter, Instagram, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. Just send us an email just so I can know what kind of weapons are going to show up.
Yes. But before tomorrow will really be our Champions League
final preview. We're going to have another podcast Thursday out around this time, like Thursday evening, and we're going to – this is it now. Like, this is the game of all games for us to be previewing. It's amazing. So that will be tomorrow. But before we do that, we have to recap the game that just occurred because another European trophy was just handed out. It is the Europa League trophy. And it means that Arsenal will not be playing Champions League football next season. They will remain in the Europa League. Chelsea were already assured of Champions League football, but they go and hoist this trophy anyway.
Lyon get a little bump from this. They've been celebrating some of their players online. They go straight to the group stages of the Champions League for next season. And yeah, we saw a bit of a battering in Baku.
Yeah, and you know who Chelsea now caught in terms of European trophies, not including like Super Cups.
Who's that?
So Liverpool lead the way with 8.
Oh, of course.
Uh-huh. And then Chelsea with 5. Good number. Same as Manchester United.
Yeah, but we have to weigh the big boys. And the big boys are 3 Champions League for Manchester United as opposed to 1 for Chelsea. So, you know, keep it in perspective.
Wow. Chelsea fans, send all your hate mail to JJ. I'm just trying to give the numbers here. Let's talk about the game, and let's start on the Chelsea side of this. Now, a couple
before
things.
Before we start, can we just talk about, and I hate to cut across you.
No, you don't.
I love it. Can we talk about the game venue itself?
A lot of green.
If you're an enthusiast of
this wild pastures of green around the perimeter.
Oh, they grow great green carpet in Azerbaijan. It looked, I mean, there was a picture that's been tweeted that I retweeted from ESPN UK, a seat that Arsenal fans had on the lower deck to behind one of the corner flags. I mean, there was a whole football pitch between them and the
field.
Now,
look, here's the thing. It's easy to make fun of that, but they're hardly the only venue that has that.
They're not, but it's bad. It really is bad.
Absolutely.
And then we had remember that angle on FIFA, which was the high angle, and your friend said, oh, I want to play that angle so I can see all the tactical movements of the players. But you were so miles away, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah,
they had that camera in the stadium.
It was far.
It was far.
It's a big circular stadium.
Oliver Kay of the Times tweeted this, really, really, really weird atmosphere in Baku. Lots of red, lots of blue, little bit of noise, but it doesn't sound or feel like a football crowd at all. It's like an international Champions Cup match that didn't sell out. It had that feeling for a little bit, particularly the first half. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, so we got that out of the way there. Starting with Chelsea, and I kind of wanted to start with the before. First off, we thought that N'Golo Kanté wouldn't play. I said that on yesterday's show, but it shows how much can change in 24 hours. He wound up giving it a go, which was important, I think, for Chelsea. But even besides that, so your last training session before a cup final, and it's marred by scenes of Gonzalo Higuain and David Luiz kind of getting into it with one another.
Bit of jostling, bit of words.
And then your manager storming off in anger, throwing his hat, and then kicking it. Like, these are not... If you were an Arsenal fan watching all that go down on the eve of this game, you'd probably think, oh, we got them. Look at them. They are a wreck. They can't wait for the season to be over. Hazard's already got one foot out the door. The players hate each other. The manager doesn't want to be there. Oh, we got them now.
I think also they knew the cameras would be there. That is the session that's televised. Mm-hmm. So usually what they do is like shooting or, you know, maybe a bit of possession, but nothing serious. So Sarri's excuse was that, oh, I was just upset that we weren't going to get a chance to do our situations, as he calls them, the set pieces, free kicks, for and against. Just realize the situation you're in. Have a quick knockabout. Nothing you do the night before the game is going to make a blind bit of difference. And get out of there. Why did there have to be this friction? Now, Higuain clearly knows he's not starting. Like, he knows he's not starting. So he's acting the clown. You know, he's upset, he's frustrated. And David Luiz is a pretty good kind of battering ram for him to take out his frustrations. Just make sure that situation doesn't happen. And also, don't lose the head yourself in front of the world's media.
Right.
It was really easy to control and manage, and they couldn't do it.
No.
But they couldn't manage a substitution in a League Cup final. So, you know, there's something weird about them. They are being carried along by the energy and the verve of some really good players. That kind of papers over the general dysfunction.
Yeah, and let's talk about one of those players. Because Eden Hazard was spectacular in this game, scored twice, set up another, had other great moves that didn't result in goals, but was still just a huge part of so much that Chelsea did. However, can I say one thing as kind of like a tangential point here to his performance?
Yeah.
So he scored two goals. He converted his penalty. Oh, everybody applauds. Can we agree for a sec that that was not a good penalty? Like, I sometimes don't like this idea that just because it goes in, it means it was a well-taken penalty. That was not. And if the keeper guessed even like partially the correct way, it's one of the easiest saves he'll ever make on a penalty.
I think the response you'll get to that was, Andrew, that he put the keeper the wrong way, and therefore there was no chance that that was going to happen. That's all a part of it. Sending the keeper the wrong way is a whole part of the package.
My mind is not evolved enough to see those moments.
I do see your point. By the way, this game was at times such a non-event, particularly at that stage that you're talking about with the penalty, that I just glanced away and was making notes. I did not pay particular attention because the minute...
What do you mean? To the game?
No. I'm watching the game and I see the penalty and I look away to scribble a note about the lead up to the penalty. You know, right. Maitland Niles barreling into the back of Giroud, the mazy run by Pedro. I was noting these things in the full confidence that Hazard was going to score.
You didn't even watch it.
Oh, I looked away and then watched the replay.
Well, he did score.
Oh, he did. And was there any doubt?
Yeah, he's brilliant. And he had some comments after the game that I guess they're not surprising in what he said, but maybe it's just surprising that an athlete would be so candid and honest while still in that moment. Because we see it sometimes, and, you know, athletes get, when people think they're going to leave after a big game, you know, they'll just give the stock answer, I'm not thinking about that right now. Right now I'm with my team, and I'll worry about that when we get back home. But instead, he said this. Here's Hazard after the game when he was asked if this was his final act as a Chelsea player.
Do you expect to be there next season, or is this a goodbye, Eden? All the fans want to know.
Yeah, I think it's a goodbye, but in football you never know. You know, my dream was to play in Premier League. I did this for 7 years in the biggest club in the world. So now maybe it's time for a new challenge.
He also said how much Chelsea was a part of his family, all those things in other interviews. So he has given you know, Chelsea is in my heart. He gave a lot of the stock answers you do get. But he was put on the spot. He was banged to rights there. There was also the rumour 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when we knew the matchup for this final, that it would be an announcement in the coming days. That hasn't changed. That will be the case over the next few days. We'll know exactly where he'll be. So, yeah, look, I he's in a unique position to me. He has come in, and what does he... Not that any player really owes his employer. There are certain scenarios in which you can say, well, he didn't do right by the club. But this is a profession and a business. You can't say this fella hasn't given everything to the club. There have been seasons where he's not been as prolific as everybody else, but it's 7 years out of a career, and he's moving in the same season, or the next season, he'll turn 29. That's a significant milestone for a footballer. So, you know, he has given enough to Chelsea for me to suggest that he can leave and there should be no rancor or anything like that.
No,
so he should be able to say on the field, farewell.
Yeah, you're right. It's easier to do that when you feel like you've kind of fulfilled a lot of your promise.
7 years is...
Yeah, multiple titles. He's one of the great players in their history, I think you would have to say.
Yes, in this portion of the Chelsea story, since Abramovich, he has been one of their top performers.
Yeah, I don't want to get fully into futures just yet. We'll talk about that coming up in a few minutes. It's kind of hard, though, to talk about this subject without talking about Maurizio Sarri, because, you know, like, for all the hate that Sarri ball gets, they do go out there tonight. They score 4 in the second half, and they look good doing it.
Yeah.
Now, the first half is another story. I actually thought Arsenal were pretty good in the first half, and were probably pretty unlucky to have not gotten a goal out of that.
Until a few minutes to halftime, they definitely shaded it. They were better on the, in terms of attacking, we'll say, how many times did we see Maitland-Niles, you know, advance down the right? Maybe they didn't make the most, well, no, maybe about it. They definitely didn't make the most out of that. They had the penalty incident where they were through on goal, which wasn't a penalty in my view. I think VAR got that right, despite what Stewie Holden said. And then on the left-hand side, I think Kolasinac created chances too, but not an awful lot. And when you break it down, Arsenal only had 2 shots on target, one of which was the Iwobi goal, which we'll get to. But anyway, back to what you were saying.
Yeah, it's just strange to me to think that, you know, the way this season is going to end for Chelsea, like we talked about, you know, finishing third in the league, a League Cup final appearance against Man City where they lose on penalties, and now hoisting a trophy, a European trophy for the Europa League. And yet it feels like there's all this weird friction between club, fan base, manager. Like, is Maurizio Sarri, do they want him to not be there anymore?
The fans don't seem to want him there anymore.
Doesn't that seem, like, that seems odd to me.
Yeah, but I don't know quite why that is the case, but I think they saw what Sarri was about early on and they seemed to be okay with it. Then they went through that rough patch during the season, which reached a peak for the fans when they were singing F Sarri Ball at Stamford Bridge, and it's never recovered from that. It's never, you know, his substitutions,
I know, they're mocked forever.
Chelsea Twitter would literally write, this is what's going to happen in the second half. The fans, for some reason, don't look at him in the way that they've looked at other managers as a guy who's going to bring them somewhere, although he has brought them somewhere. They have the secondary major honour in European football tonight as we sit here. So it's. I think he's done really well. I actually love the way they started the season, the way they played football. I thought one of the games of the season was that Liverpool-Chelsea game. Mm-hmm. And they played brilliant football. At times, Liverpool, who are, as we could see, far and away the second best team in the country by a measure, Chelsea really put it up to them and gave them problems some other teams didn't. That said, the fans have not warmed to him. And I don't know if he's going anywhere, though, necessarily. I've talked about this before on the podcast with Abramovich. He's in this weird situation. He's not even in the country. He doesn't have a visa. The club is in this general limbo with the transfer ban. Is he about to cut another manager, pay out a whole boatload of money after he's just done this? In the past, I'd say yes. That was the fate that befell Roberto Di Matteo. That was the fate that befell Scolari. That was the fate that befell Carlo Ancelotti. But these are changed times. And I just think we're going to see an early season of rancor at Chelsea when this guy is back again, because they don't want him.
Well, the interesting thing is whether or not the decision is now up to Chelsea. Like, I feel like the narrative around Sarri and the club has changed a little bit, and then if it were up to Chelsea and Abramovich, he would not go. And tonight, I would think, solidifies that feeling. But I wonder now if it's Sarri who says, I don't want any more of this. This was a more stressful season than I ever imagined it would be. The fan base doesn't like me. And now there's this managerial opening at Juventus for him to possibly go back to Italy, where he has had at least some measure of real success.
Well, this was his first trophy in professional football. True. That's worth noting as well. And I'm sure that's been on the minds of Chelsea fans who have been asked to play this new type of football and been told, oh, it's great. And then, I suppose, look at his CV and say, well, it's never won anywhere.
It's a fair point. But if he does go off to Juventus, it won't be Chelsea firing him and having to pay him out. It will be Juventus coming in and having to buy him.
So maybe they wait for that eventuality to happen. But
boy, if you're Juventus, you like him that much? Like, you want to bring Sarri Ball to a club with Cristiano Ronaldo and make that all work? Like, you're actually willing to pay Chelsea whatever the buyout fee is to bring him over there?
Don't forget,
I don't know, there's got to be somebody else, I would think.
Well, they are trying desperately to win a European Cup in the lifetime of while they have Cristiano Ronaldo and some other players at the club, so they will probably look at every avenue possible in achieving that.
One guy I wanted to talk about for Chelsea tonight who I couldn't help but feel a little bit good for, and that was Olivier Giroud, who, I don't know, his tenure with Chelsea has been, it's been very interesting in that they've just, like, through all of Morata's struggles, it seemed like they never really fully embraced, okay, well, let's just go with Giroud then. Like, it didn't seem like that was ever really an option for them, and then they went out and got Higuain. But in the end, Giroud was excellent tonight. And how about this, JJ? He scored in the game, and he finished the season as the top scorer in the Europa League. 11 goals. He's the first player to score 11 goals in major European competition for an English club since
Stefan Givarch of Auxerre, 1997-98, and we all remember.
Well, you know. The answer is no.
Who?
Since Alan Shearer scored 11 in the 04-05 UEFA Cup for Newcastle.
Oh, sorry. Did you say for an English club? I thought you were about to read this stat, which I have in front of me, so I jumped the gun. Olivier Giroud, set to be the first French top scorer in the UEFA men's club competition, sent Stefan Givarch in 97-98 for Auxerre. which, I mean, Shearer, okay. It's interesting. Guy Varge ended up at Newcastle. Could not score. Disastrous signing. Just terrible. And he was also the leading French scorer when they went into the World Cup based on that season. Didn't score. Very poor. But anyway, I was glad for him too. That was a perfect centre-forward performance from him. You know, think about some of the things he did. Think about the delicious ball that he played back for Hazard for the fourth.
Yeah.
That was really difficult. And it was one of those great one-twos between them. Now, I will say this, and it's important to say, and I know we're going to get on to Arsenal, but they were so compliant in their own downfall. It was really unbelievable. We can wax lyrical about Hazard all you want. The last thing you want, you can't do it twice, to lose the ball in the midfield and then be broken upon. And that happened for two goals.
Yeah, the goal that you're talking about, the final fourth.
That happened, but it happened for, which goal was the other goal that it happened for two? For the Pedro goal.
Yeah.
That can't happen. Come on.
Yeah. The fourth one that you're referring to, we heard the audio of how it sounded on television, but there was another guy on the call, one of our favorite people, Mark Goldbridge. Now, I know he's a Manchester United guy, but he was doing this game too.
He's so many strings to his bow.
Yeah. Here he was online. I don't know. What do you even plug? I feel like I have to plug something for him to say all this.
Go to Goldbridge, Mark Goldbridge's Twitter. I'm sure he's on that. Okay. Maybe he's on Twitch, but he's definitely on his fan site at Goldbridge World.
I adore him. Here's what he sounded like.
Hazard 4-1. Boop, 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 boop. Baku again. It's 4-1. They were in it for all of about 3 minutes. They really are absolute pants. They are pants. Absolutely pants, our Arsenal.
There's just some phrases, like, that's not one that I... Like, I've gotten to know a lot of...
Hazard!
European terminology from you. But is pants, is that a normal insult?
In England, if something is bad, it's pants, because it refers to underwear. Okay. Not trousers. Not like pants, what we call pants over here. It means like wife fronts, boxers. And they're, if something is pants, that's what they say. Oh, that's pants.
I don't hear that very often. That's one of the first times I think I've ever heard
it. It's an English thing.
He's one of my favorite people. But the Giroud goal got me thinking about Arsenal a little bit because, you know, he's not exactly like Lucas Moura at this stage in his career. Like, Olivier Giroud was never the fastest guy on the pitch, and he's certainly not now. But JJ, the way that he just like coasts past Koscielny to get to that ball first and get his head on it. You know, Laurent Koscielny was not so long ago one of the best central defenders in England. But you couldn't help but look at that. And the guy's been through a lot of injuries year after year. So I feel bad saying it, but
I mean, how long is he really back? He's not.
You're right. So his fitness is probably already in question. But the fact that they feel he's their best option in a cup final of massive significance to them, more significance than what it is to Chelsea. And like, you just look at it and it's, it becomes easy to see why Arsenal are where they are right now. They have a lot of guys that you just look at and you think, these guys are cooked.
Yeah. We've talked about their defending for a long time, and we said they need to completely change that. Like, Socrates's got to go. Koscielny's got to go. We talked about them revamping the midfield. It's probably too soon for Guendouzi. Torreira's been good this season, but needs help. We're not sure about Granit Xhaka. He's a good player, but is he good enough for Arsenal right now? He ran out of steam tonight. I actually thought he had a very good first half, ran out of steam. Like, that forward line, I think they're in good shape there. I think their attack is in decent shape with Lacazette, Aubameyang. But the back line needs major surgery. And the only thing you could say that, if you're coming out of this game and you're looking at who's in better shape, Chelsea have just won the trophy, but they have this transfer ban. The main protagonist tonight, one is on his way in Hazard. Pedro is over 30. Giroud is over 30. Willian, I mean, if there wasn't a transfer ban, he would be moved on to be replaced, but they can't do that. There's a state, they don't know about their manager's future. There's problems at Chelsea too, but...
So if you had to buy stock in one of these two clubs moving forward, would buy an Arsenal?
I would buy an Arsenal now, but then... Would I though? Because they've got contracts that are crippling them. tonight, the guy we haven't mentioned, how have we gone long into this far into a game with a World Cup winning player like Mesut Ozil and haven't spoken about him?
What is there to say?
There's nothing to say. This has been a disastrous season for him. His contract is an albatross. And also, the guy who wasn't there tonight too, Mkhitaryan. Has that been an unmitigated success for Arsenal? No.
No.
And they've tied themselves to these enormous contracts, including Lacazette and Aubameyang, and they need to do major surgery elsewhere and stay within, you know, financial fair play and stay within the budget that I'm sure that they have.
And I feel like I kind of Jordi Alba'd Aubameyang. I was talking yesterday about, you know, how good he was, the hat trick leading up, and then tonight he was terrible. Like, you can see why, in a game like tonight, you could see why some Arsenal fans are frustrated with him. Now, it's unfair. I mean, he scored a ton of goals for them this year. There are moments like, you know, the chance right after it got to, I think right after it went to 4-1, and you think, oh, well, that's it. Chelsea, you know, that's Arsenal done. And then a great chance falls to Aubameyang and he puts it wide. And you saw like Unai Emery put his head in his hands because that was a moment where, okay, maybe there could have been some life in the last 20 minutes of that game. But you know, he can be frustrating.
Could you imagine this game without the bolt from the blue that was Alex Iwobi's strike?
Yeah.
Think about how we'd be feeling right now. I mean, it was still a hammering, but at least Arsenal got on the score sheet. One of only two shots on target. And we think about that first half where we had Piers Morgan tweeting out how great that first half was and how he was hoping for a sizzling second half. Everything that was good about Arsenal in the first half stopped. And even what was good about Arsenal in the first half wasn't a ton of chances. You know, I think of Kepa. He punched twice on crosses he could have caught. Did he make a save? I'm trying to think, did he make a save? Actually, the first time a goalkeeper went full length was probably Peter Cech. So even the first half that Arsenal put in wasn't really anything.
I mean, there was the one that Granit Xhaka put over the bar. Well, I don't think Ariza Balaga actually touched it, did he?
That actually clipped the top of the bar.
Yeah.
That was a good effort. But that's what I'm talking about. There was a little bit of drive from Xhaka in the first half that was, okay, keep that going. You saw the two wide players get forward, keep that going. You know, but you saw none of that in the second half. Arsenal just fell away. Here's another one from a friend of ours who we've had on the podcast before, from Arsblog, Andrew Mangan. Just one thing I forgot to mention, and I think it's important. There's a lot wrong with this club right now, but when your owner can't even be bothered to show up for a European final, it tells you it starts right at the top. Now, if that's true that Stan Kroenke wasn't at that final, I'm throwing my hands in the air. That's not acceptable. You are recently, within the last year, become the majority shareholder in Arsenal Football Club. Things have changed at Arsenal to the point where there are no longer supporter shareholders. It's all you now. This is a major final in the first season of your newly appointed manager. And you're not there.
What a terrible message that sends
just
to
awful.
The club, to the fan base. Yeah, it's not how. And look, he's never going to be beloved. I think the ship has sailed on that.
But show me you're engaged. Show me you're engaged.
Yeah.
Show me you care. Because this can't be just another acquisition for your sports company firm or your portfolio of sports teams. It can't be. It's too big of a club. You can't treat it like this. And again, I know he's a flavour of the month, but Wes Edens showed up at Aston Villa. Think about the Milwaukee Bucks in the last month. Think about all of that. Wes Edens was there, club tie on, at Wembley for that game. Owners have to show the fan base that they care, and he does not.
Yeah, Abramovich was there. They did show him
looking glum.
Well, he had a kind of like a wry smile.
Yeah,
I
hope he enjoyed it.
I'm still, while you were talking there, I'm still kind of like batting back and forth in my head the question
who's
that I
asked
about
ship?
Who I would buy stock in moving forward. I have this pull where I keep wanting to say Chelsea. Transfer ban or not, simply because I'm assuming in my head that Hazard is gone. Once I hear him say that, like, to me, Chelsea can talk about wanting a certain sum of money that sounds unrealistic, but in the end, I feel like it's going to get worked out, and I believe that he'll be gone. But you can't act like there aren't still really good players that will be playing for them. N'Golo Kanté will be there. You know, there's guys who tonight were hurt that could. Like, that are young players. Hudson-Odoi is now not going to go anywhere. You know, Ruben Loftus-Cheek will come back. You know, I don't know exactly when these guys will be back. How much of next season might they miss?
They have a plethora of loan players across Europe and England.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be relying on those guys if we're talking about next season's success.
But I named out a list of guys that they really should be probably moving on. I think Chelsea might they mightn't be great next season. You're taking out such a major piece and you're replacing it with an injury-prone early 20-something.
Well,
I mean, with a lot of, it's a lot of pressure to put on Christian Pulisic to come in there and say, well, hey, you're not replacing Hazard per se, but you're going in there and you need to contribute
straight away. He can't go in there with that mentality. And the club can't push that mentality on him.
The fans will.
But like, he cannot be expected to just, okay, you're Hazard now. Like, if it's just like a like for like sub, that's a problem. It's not fair.
I don't think anybody will think that, but ultimately the times make the man, Andrew, and I don't think they're going to be particularly good next season. If this transfer ban materializes, which we expect it will, with the personnel they have right now, I mean, N'Golo Kanté can only do so much. How can we even say what role N'Golo Kanté is going to play? If it's Sarri, what happens? Does he play that role that he's played most of the season?
Probably.
What happens? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, it was fun. It was an interesting second half. There's no question about that. And that is your Europa League final.
One little thing to mention.
Mm-hmm.
What about Rob Green? Rob Green celebrating a Europa League victory. Rob Green, as BT Sport pointed out, is the only player from Norwich's 2003-2004 first division winning squad to lift the Europa League.
How about that for a stat?
I think he had a quote that he said as a third choice goalkeeper when he was signed at Chelsea as cover for Courtois and Willy Caballero. When he was signed, a quote got into the papers. It's hard to be motivated when you're third choice. Well, you found it now.
He'll have that picture forever.
Going home with a medal.
Yeah. Arsenal, by the way, have now lost their last four major European finals. It's been 25 years since their only European final win.
Against Parma in Copenhagen. 1-0, Alan Smith with the volley. And that was quite a Parma team as well.
And this will now mean three seasons without Champions League football for Arsenal. First time they've gone that long since 95 through 98. So we can sit here and talk about the transfer ban on Chelsea, but if you're talking about Arsenal bringing in high caliber, high quality talent to replace some of these defenders that just aren't good enough anymore, are those guys going to a side that's not competing in a Champions League? It's going to be hard for them to just lure guys in by saying, "Hey, we're Arsenal." Like, does that work?
I don't know. I don't know. There was
if Newcastle become the new Man City. Now you got them to contend with.
So many questions.
Really, there really are.
Who becomes the new Newcastle?
It's a great question.
Crystal Palace?
I don't know. West Ham? I don't know. So there you go. That's the Europa League final. There's still one more European final to discuss. We will do that in great detail tomorrow on the podcast, Liverpool and Tottenham. But congrats to Chelsea. 4-1 winners. They hoist the Europa League trophy. We are going to take a very quick break. When we come back, it's really just the end here. Red cards and man of the match.
Which is always fun. What do you mean the end?
But normally, like, there's this and then that, and then we get to the red cards man of the match. So we've got that coming up. I feel like I said before, I think people are going to enjoy these. Don't go anywhere. Back now. Caught offside. JJ, one thing we didn't mention when we were talking about the Europa League final, because I do believe we did a fine job of keeping it as much to the soccer as we possibly could.
Yeah.
But we all know what the storylines were going in. It was the Armenia situation with Mkhitaryan. It was the low figures of tickets that were being handed out to the two clubs. So in the end, what did you think of the attendance, of how it looked? I haven't seen an actual number yet, but
the lower bowl, there seemed to be a lot of green seats.
Unquestionably.
Yeah. No question about it. The noise was weird. There was no singing.
Oh, so here I do have a figure.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. So the official attendance for the match was 51,370. It's a stadium that seats just under 69,000. That's a lot of empty seats.
That is a lot of empty seats. Yeah, it didn't really... I suppose the Arsenal players who had... I believe they had played there earlier in Europa League qualifying or group stage or whatever against Karabakh said that the pitch had improved unbelievably. So for a European final, we had a nice surface to play on.
Yeah, but I believe UEFA has said that this venue will remain on the docket.
For 2020?
Yeah.
Which, I don't know.
On Sky Sports here, I'm reading an article. Locals unfurled a banner at the end of the game that read, "We are part of football. Thanks to UEFA for the final." So, I mean, look, you would expect the people in Baku to be thrilled to be able to host an event like this and to feel like they're part of something. But
a lot of videos of police going around looking for Mkhitaryan jerseys. Mm-hmm. That was not very nice.
No, I mean, the guy's not there. Like, you think you won, you know?
Yeah, he's not there. Why do you need to police the jerseys?
Yeah, I saw Arsenal fans tweeting. There was an Arsenal fan, I don't remember what his name was on Twitter, but I saw it retweeted that he was wearing an Arsenal jersey and had like an Arsenal flag draped around him, and he said security was checking under his flag to see if there was a name on the back, presumably to see if it was Mkhitaryan.
And then there was a man dressed as Big Ben.
I saw that.
The clock tower.
Yeah, well, it was an all-London final. I suppose that makes sense. JJ, before we get to red cards and man of the match, you have a thing in front of you there.
Oh, I have a thing, and I should read this thing. Andrew, did you know that 66% of men start to lose their hair by age 35? Once you've noticed thinning hair, it can be too late. The best way to prevent more hair loss is to do something about it while you still have time. It's time to get a handle on those precious locks. I ask you, Andrew, do you want a bald spot to pop up on your hairline to recede, or do you want to do something about it first? Here's the solution. Forhims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. I was looking at your skin. You do need a bit of moisturizer. You're quite crackly.
That's fair.
You're like a flapjack.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims is helping guys be the best version of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat hair loss. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions backed by science. Hims was created by a guy who knows some men's health conversations are easier online than in person. No more awkward in-person doctor's visits or long pharmacy lines. 4Hims connects you to real doctors online, which could save you hours. Completely confidential and discreet. Order now. Our listeners can get started with the Hims Complete Hair Kit for just $5 today while supplies last and subject to doctor's approval. See websites for full details and safety information. This could cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy somewhere else. Go to hims.com/offside. That's forhims.com/offside. forhims.com/offside.
It's beautiful.
Don't do David Silva, who, when he asked for his hair transplant, give me all the hair in the world.
Yeah, although I think that it looked like he's cut it a little bit. I feel like I remember his hair being longer than, like, he looked like...
Didn't even know he was going bald, to be honest. Then he shaved it and kept it shaved for a while. The next thing comes back with this unbelievable head of hair.
Oh, David Silva, you said. My head was...
Who are you talking about?
I'm still thinking from the game tonight.
David Luiz?
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's all Sideshow Bob's hair.
Yeah, that's why I said it used to be longer. Oh, I don't know what I'm talking about. All right, ready?
Yep. Red card.
Let's do that. You want to go first?
Sure. I'm interested to get people's opinions on this. We've had a few tweets about it. This is a report from Tom Marshall. Major League Soccer and League MX have confirmed the creation of an annual League's Cup between teams from each competition, as reported by ESPN last February. So we knew this was in the pipeline, but it was kind of announced today. The inaugural cup competition will begin in the United States over July 23rd and 24th and see Houston Dynamo face Club America, Real Salt Lake host Tigres, Chicago Fire play Cruz Azul, and LA Galaxy take on Tijuana. The MLS teams will all play at home. The winners of the quarterfinals advance to the semis, which will be played on August 20th. MLS clubs will play at home if they face Mexican opposition, and the games will be either BBVA Compass Stadium in Houston or Dignity Health Sports Park in Los Angeles if they are all Liga MX or MLS affairs. The final will take place on September 18th in the United States at a location yet to be announced. We are excited to take our partnership with Liga MX to the next level with League's Cup, MLS Commissioner Don Garber said in a statement. We have an intense rivalry between our national teams, and League's Cup provides a terrific opportunity to increase the growing rivalry between MLS and Liga MX clubs. Why are they doing this?
Does this go under the category of TMF?
Too much football. Too much football.
I mean, this feels to me like it's completely undercutting
MLS
and the CONCACAF Champions League.
It's in bang in the middle of the MLS season. It's undercutting the CONCACAF Champions League. because it's much more smaller and condensed. Now, what I understand is that MLS looks south of the border with the crowds and the interest with envious eyes, and looks at our own Mexican-American population here, which fill stadiums regularly. The average for a Mexican national team attendance across everything is 50,000. You have said it before. Mexican national team pitch up in Des Moines, Iowa, it will be full. So they're clearly trying to cash in on this as another stream of revenue. And there's also been talks about, you know, uniting the two leagues in some kind of Champions League style structure.
But don't you already have that?
Yeah, I know. Why don't they all row in or revamp or rethink the Scotiabank CONCACAF Champions League? Do you think people will take this seriously?
Look, overall, no. But if your team is playing in it, I could see Mexican fans turning out. I could see, like, will Houston Dynamo fans show up for that game? Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit of too much football. And when that is the case, I don't know if fan interest is really there.
You know who's taking it seriously?
Who's that?
Think of an MLS coach that takes everything seriously.
Mike Petke?
Yep. We are taking this extremely seriously. This is not like when we played Manchester United in the summer friendly. Of course, we want to win that too, but this is a tournament style. Like, I love the way he has to qualify it. Like, I am the most engaged coach in history. This is not like when we played Manchester United in the summer friendly. Okay, we accept what you mean by that. But of course I wanted to win that too. It's something that's going to have a trophy at the end of it, so that's something that we take extremely seriously. And it's something that's going to motivate the players, as it will myself, coaches and staff.
Well, it remains to be seen. I don't know. I'm not moved.
Oh, I'm not moved at all.
Let's see, JJ. My red card goes to CONCACAF President Victor Montagliani. He was on Planet Football with Grant Wall, and Grant asked him about the Women's World Cup final and the Men's Gold Cup final, and how they could have possibly wound up occurring on the same day, July 7th. Here is what Montagliani had to say.
You know, it was simply an error. It was no intent, obviously. And I totally understand why people or some fans were disappointed. I was the chairman of the Women's World Cup, so I totally understand that. But by the time the error was kind of brought out, it was very difficult for many, many reasons. To just even move one day, and we tried. I can be honest with you and say that it's not that we didn't look into it, but logistically it was just already too big of a mountain to move.
So here's the thing for me. I actually don't think that this is quite as terrible as some people are making it out to be. The women's final is at 11 a.m., and the Gold Cup final is at 9:15 p.m. So you don't have to choose. You can watch both. You can still go about your summer weekend activities in between. However, that is all besides the point. The point is, when scheduling the Gold Cup, they simply forgot about the Women's World Cup final.
It wasn't even a thought.
No one in the room had a calendar. I don't do anything without checking my calendar. When my wife tells me we're going to have dinner plans one night, I check my calendar to see what regular season Sixers game I might miss. You mean to tell me that when they were scheduling the Gold Cup final, no one even thought to look at what might be happening on that same day? And the guy in charge was also the chairman of the Women's World Cup, as he just said there to Grant Wall. I'll say this. I respect Montagliani in his willingness to address it, and I certainly respect his honesty, but that does not mean that it is okay. How can that happen?
Because it's an afterthought. For a lot of these guys,
But that's what I'm saying. It shouldn't have been for him, because he says there that he was the chairman of the Women's World Cup. So it wasn't an afterthought.
If only there was a device at a meeting that I could type into to find the dates of international football games.
I saw that. I just thought that is too weird that you could have just forgotten. Like, technology is just, I don't know, like, it's just, how many, whatever.
Caught offsides, man of the match.
What do you have?
Gennaro Gattuso. Gennaro Gattuso has announced he is leaving his role as Milan head coach. The Rossoneri missed out on a Champions League qualification on Sunday despite ending the season with a 3-2 victory against Spal. Gattuso, whose contract runs until 2021, has confirmed he is leaving the club, and the former Milan defender will not be taking any compensation. Deciding to leave Milan's bench is not easy, but it's a decision I had to make, he said, according to Repubblica. There was not a precise moment in which I decided. It was the sum of these 18 months as coach of a team that for me will never be like the others. Months that I lived with great passion, unforgettable months. Mine is a painful but thoughtful choice. Am I giving up a 2-year contract? Yes, because my story with Milan can never be a question of money. Gattuso took the role in November 2017 after a spell as U team coach. Now, their fifth place finish in Serie A this season was their highest since 2012-2013. Gattuso did an up and down job. I think he often, you know, he cancelled Christmas for 1 year and took them to a training camp. He did things
Christmas
like,
is cancelled.
Yeah, he did things like that. But he was quite, you know, enigmatic, as you can tell from his flowery speech. But to give up 2 years of money that is rightfully his is pretty special. There was also a report from Goal.com that he took that job in November 2017. He remained on his youth team salary for a year. You're managing AC Milan. So then when he was kept on, it was renegotiated and then he got paid the big bucks. But surely, you know, he's again, it's that drop. Have we still got that money drop again with the money?
Again with the money? Yeah, again with the money.
But seriously, you know, that's unbelievable to leave 2 years worth of salary on the table.
Yeah, pretty rare. Pretty rare indeed. I don't think that I would do that.
No, I wouldn't do that. But still, that's his kind of love for Milan. No, he was a stalwart there, so I guess maybe that's his reasoning, but still.
Yeah. Let's see, JJ. My man of the match is Joe Zhao, American who is qualified for the 40-man preliminary Gold Cup roster. Last week we had Jeff Carlisle on. He mentioned what a great story it was that Zhao was back in the national team fold. I heard him say it, but it wasn't really on the forefront of my mind. I just didn't think much of it. Then, though, a couple days later, I saw Zhao tweet a picture of himself training with the U.S. men with the caption, "If only you knew what I had to do to get back to this point." And then it resonated. This guy was one of the most highly touted U.S. prospects, and then injuries took over. Google his name, Joe Zhao, and injuries, and then click on the link for his transfer market injury history. And what you'll see is astounding for a guy who's only 26 years old. 2013, adductor muscle problems. 2014, a meniscus injury. Then there was that catastrophic knee injury in 2015 that kept him out for 629 days. But he fought back. And then in 2017, he missed more time with further knee issues. Then in 2018, he tore muscle fiber. That kept him out a month, followed by more muscle problems. Then this past season, he suffered a plantar fascia injury, which kept him out for 37 days. Let me repeat again that he's just 26 years old, and he's already dealt with all of those injuries. Those injuries would have ended many careers, and while it certainly derailed his, seeing him back in the U.S. training kit just goes to show that a derailment is only temporary. This guy fought like hell to prove the doubters wrong and to keep himself in the national team picture, and while we don't know whether or not he'll even make the final squad, the fact that he's even in the running speaks volumes about the guy's heart. So Joe Zhao will say proudly here on this show that we are rooting for you. Good for him.
Man. Absolutely. That's just an unbelievable record of injuries.
Yeah. I mean, that knee injury, I remember when it happened because he was so highly thought of in the U.S. team picture. And, I mean, 629 days between games.
What year are we talking?
That was it was over the course of a couple years. It was in 2015 through the rest of, it happened in January of 15. And he didn't play again, I think, until October of 2016.
Can you imagine?
If my math is right,
Can you imagine the mental fortitude you need to keep going and just not say this isn't worth it,
and to then come back and still be highly thought of enough that Greg Berhalter would consider him for his Gold Cup roster, his first Gold Cup roster.
I'm rooting for him to feature this summer heavily.
Yeah,
I really am.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go. That's our show. I did want to say that the reaction to the song having been played seems to have been mostly positive.
People loved it. But they want it now to be played. They want it as a drop.
Well, it already is.
No, but as an intro.
EPL, back for more.
What is it that they're looking for?
They want more of it as an intro to every time we do, like, what to watch for with the Premier League.
Oh, like when the Premier League is featured in what to watch for. All right, well, we'll consider that.
JT Naples wants EPL back for more as an annual thing. I don't know how that would work, but I guess that you would...
Like every year I'll introduce the season with a song.
Right.
To the tune of We Didn't Start the Fire.
Yeah, JT said it was pure gold. It was. Most people loved it. They really loved it. Why wouldn't they love it?
Well, because it was horrifying.
It was great.
And humiliating. But yeah, some people though, there was one guy, I'm trying to find his tweet right now, but there was one guy who actually said that he thought it was not bad. To which I replied immediately, be my friend.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. He's completely wrong.
Let's see. Like I said, we'll be back tomorrow with a Champions League final preview. One more reminder for you to join us at the Harry Lemon to watch the game. Have a drink with us this Saturday. It's on Avenue B in Manhattan between 2nd and 3rd Streets. Should be a blast. Hey, JJ, to you I say.
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.